How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here. Wrestling Observer Radio, August 27, 2015. Figure4Online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. Joined today by Chris Hero. We're going to be talking the Battle of Los Angeles weekend. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. If you're not going, too bad. You can't go. Everything is sold out. Front row sold out. General admission sold out. They've even sold out standing room only. There's no room for anyone else to stand in this building. It's going to be quite the weekend. And Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. I actually just got to LA a couple hours ago. I'm ready for the weekend.
It's pretty crazy, the story of PWG of late. Still in the same building, selling this thing out like instantly. Instantly, there's zero tickets available. The Rock probably couldn't get into the building at this point.
He could, but
I personal experience, I've tried to purchase tickets, and you can have like three different devices open, refreshing. You're already logged into PayPal, and then it's just it's chance, you know. It's sold out in 3, 4, 5 minutes, you know, every time. And this time there was such high demand that they actually opened up the staying room tickets. They usually save a couple at the door for the guys that like to camp out for like 12 hours. So it's going to be crazy.
Dave, I've seen the size of The Rock. He's not fitting in this building if all of the standing room only tickets are sold out. Now, I think the question for Chris, since he's obviously working there and knows a little bit of the inside, everyone always asks, why not move into a bigger building and sell more tickets?
And also, why not do internet pay-per-view broadcasts of the shows? Because the shows garner now a lot of attention, you know, all over the wrestling world from people who, you know, I mean, people who live in Los Angeles who can't get in, and people who live in the remaining 170 countries that, you know, aren't going to come in.
Or 206, according to WWE.
Well, whatever the number is. Yeah.
Okay, so it's as simple as not wanting to break something, not wanting to fix something that's broke.
That's not broken.
I can't even say right. You know what I mean? They don't want to break it in the process of trying to make it more conducive to everybody. You move out of that venue and you run the risk of losing the atmosphere. Plus, they've had such a relationship with that venue over the years that it's hard to kind of just hop into a new building and hope that everything is, you know, A-okay. And then also, I think with the iPay-per-views, number one, you have guys that work for a lot of companies that already do iPay-per-views, so there might be a slight conflict of interest. I don't really know all about that. But I think a lot of people think the DVD medium is dying, and you know, maybe it is to an extent, but every time a PWG trailer comes out for an upcoming show, it's shared all across the board by everybody. Every time the DVD comes out, you still see people on Twitter taking pictures of their DVD. They're making GIFs and posting them online. So it's the one independent wrestling company that has maintained their buzz across the DVD medium. So.
Yeah, I know when the DVDs are out, I start getting emails, especially if I'm in ringside at one of the shows. You know, people will start asking me about it and stuff. So, yeah. Real quick, for people who don't know, this is the lineup. These lineups are just freaking incredible. The third night lineup we don't have, but we do have the first two nights. The Friday night show, which is tomorrow night, I'm already jazzed for it. It's Aerostar, who, if you haven't seen him, obviously from Lucha Underground, the guy's an incredible flyer against Brian Cage. Biff Busick against Andrew Everett, who have both been on the shows of late. Will Ospreay making his PWG debut, and maybe his U.S. debut, as far as I know, against Mark Andrews, who some of you may have seen in TNA. And Will Ospreay, I've heard a lot
Mandrews.
About. Yeah, Mandrews. Will Ospreay, from the matches I've seen, is really spectacular. Trent Beretta against Trevor Lee, who you probably people have seen around. Drago against Pentagon Jr. from Lucha Underground. Of course, they're both great, actually. Phoenix against Matt Sydal, which is a freaking crazy-ass match. Jack Evans and Helico against Ricochet and Rich Swann, which is just a ridiculous match. And then the main event is Young Bucks and Roderick Strong against Tommy End, who you worked with, Marty Skrull from the UK, and Zack Sabre Jr., who's one of my favorite wrestlers in the world right now, even though I never talk about him, but he is his match with his match with Roderick Strong on a PWG show, and they also had one on an Evolve show, I think. Those were you really have to watch them. That's like watching like the Johnny Saint matches from England, you know, in another generation. It's really something. The Saturday night. Yeah. So Saturday night is Rich Swann against Marty Skrull, Chris Hero against Timothy Thatcher, and you guys have worked twice together, right? So far?
Yes, we have.
Yeah, and everyone was raving. There were people who, and not a few, there were a lot of people who thought that your match with Thatcher was the best match on WrestleMania weekend, and that takes in a lot of ground because there was a hell of a lot of good shows and a lot of great matches that weekend.
That was one with just a really great atmosphere that kind of made everything better by proxy.
Yeah, Drew Gulick against Tommy End, Jack Evans against Angelico, which may be their first singles match against each other, Drew Galloway against Speedball Mike Bailey, who's going to be, I think, one of the, he's going to get a lot of buzz. I mean, Chris's match with Mike Bailey was really good on the last show, and he's got a few cool things that I think will get over everywhere. And then Ricochet against Zack Sabre Jr., which is, you know, I'm super looking forward to. And
so many good matches. God, it's crazy.
We're not even done. We got Phoenix and Aerostar against Drago and Pentagon Jr. And then the main event is the Young Bucks and Super Dragon against Bit Music, Trevor Lee, and Andrew Everett. So it's like, it's ridiculous, these cards. So anyway, now I got that out of the way. Chris, you know, you're going to be wrestling Thatcher. And you brought it up, you know, as far as your first match, and then you had a second match in Evolve, which I also heard was tremendous. And what's it like? What's your thoughts on as far as Thatcher? Because Thatcher's got a very, you know, I've actually seen him a lot because he wrestles in San Jose fairly often, and in this area, he's got a very different style of most of the guys that we're talking about, maybe almost everyone that we're talking about. So how did you guys managed to make your stuff gel so well?
So I think Thatcher is a guy with just supreme presence. I mean, he commands your attention when he's in the ring, doing absolutely nothing. I know that's kind of a cliched thing to say, but it's true. He carries himself in a similar way to kind of Cesaro, how he just commands the ring when he's in there. Every little movement he makes is just pure and just done with complete emphasis. He's just super intense. I actually wrestled Thatcher years ago in Los Angeles, a match that no one will ever see because it was filmed as a part of the Wrestling Retribution Project. That whole crazy thing. And we wrestled, and I thought he was talented at that time. He reminded me like of early Nigel before Nigel had really kind of hit his groove. But I mean, he hops back on the scene. You start seeing him pop up, you know, about a year and a half ago again. And he's very incredible. He's got a Dutch kind of Minoru Suzuki kind of style in the ring. And, I believe you saw him and Tommy End from WrestleMania weekend, and it was different than any other match that weekend. I thought it was really good. And I'm really looking forward to the match. One, because like I said, our match at Evolve, just our first one at Evolve, the crowd atmosphere just really made it. So I'm looking forward to that again. And an even crazier crowd over there. Like, I love the atmosphere so much. It's
one of those. Actually, Chris, I think we're kind of losing you a little bit.
Oh, sorry.
There we go.
Okay. Just saying that I love wrestling in Reseda, and I really can't wait for this match to take place.
Now, since you mentioned it, I mean, we can go back to PWG here in a moment, but we get emails literally on about a weekly basis from people going, whatever happened to the Wrestling Retribution Project? I presume you have no idea either, but I may as well ask.
I don't really know. I know that they went in the studio to do some recording. I know Nigel was not a part of the project at the time, but he went to do some production. And I know there was a Vimeo account that they posted some stuff, like Joey Ryan was like the gay character, so they posted, you know, the outing of Joey Ryan's character. They posted a battle royal, a couple things like that, but nothing ever was released. So, yeah, No word.
It's like the second season of Nitro that I've been waiting for 15 years now.
But that actually existed.
Second season? No, it's the season finale.
Oh, after the season finale.
Yeah.
Right.
It was all done. That was it.
Yeah, that's right. I do remember now, yeah.
Now, Chris, I know that you have obviously done a million matches down at PWG for years and years now, but as Dave noted, we've got a couple of guys coming in. I mean, looking at the tournament here, do you have anybody in particular that maybe you've only had a couple of matches with, or maybe you've never worked before, that if you had the opportunity, they would be on your list for PWG?
Oh, man. Honestly, there isn't a bad pick in there, but I'd say guys that I've not been in the ring with, I haven't wrestled any of the Lucha Underground guys, not counting Jack Evans, because I had a couple little matches with Jack over the years, but any of those, I haven't wrestled Ospreay or Mark Andrews. I'm trying to think who else. I may have wrestled just about everybody else though.
Now, when they do a tournament like this, are you aware, like right now, where you're going in this tournament? In the sense that, do they kind of
no clue whatsoever?
Do they really fly in and not tell you anything? Is that how it works?
I mean, it would be nice to have a bit of an idea, but at the same time, it's a bit of our artistic creativity to just kind of take what we get and then try to make the most out of it. So, yeah, I mean, obviously it'd be nice to know, but at the same time, we're all pretty good on our toes. So that makes it just a little bit more exciting too.
Now, are you aware of any tournaments in the past where maybe there was a plan for who was doing what, who was going where, maybe who was going to win, and something happened in the tournament? Maybe somebody
got all the time
injury. Yeah. Are there any of those that really stick out?
Yeah, I mean, I'm having trouble thinking of a specific instance, but I know a lot of people have had injuries in earlier rounds, and maybe they're supposed to win their first match and they get hurt, so they win, but then they figure out that they can't, it's not worth it to try another one, so they'll just take a bye out of the tournament for real, and it just kind of mixes things up a little bit.
I mean, does it bother them, or is it kind of like, well, at the end of the day, we're going to have a great tournament, and it's not like, I don't want to say it's not important who wins. That's not what I'm trying to say here,
yeah.
But it's not like, New Japan, they're booking all the way to the Tokyo Dome. They got a Tokyo Dome main event, and if the guy gets hurt and screws up the G1, I mean, that's a pretty big deal. I mean, is it sort of the same way with PWG, or is it sort of like, well, we know things are going to happen. We're just going to do the best we can. We're not going to freak out about it, and we're just going to move forward.
I think there is a good amount of personal disappointment if somebody gets hurt or something happens and, they can't continue for whatever reason. They feel, I know I would feel, disappointed and upset. But at the same time, the locker room, especially at PWG, is a very, very encouraging locker room. I've been talking about this. I actually had a conversation with Conan about this the last time he was at PWG. I've been wrestling now. September will be 17 full years as a professional wrestler, which is really weird saying that out loud. But I remember days when you would sit by the monitor and the older wrestlers would kind of gather around and just ridicule the younger guys for doing too much or messing up or whatever. And I think that era has at least evolved to where we all feel like we're on a team together. We're all, we're all trying to one-up each other in the best way possible. So if something like that happens with an injury or somebody messes up a fish or whatever, most of us just are immediately on that person's side the second they come back and listen, it sucks, but it happens. We're just all kind of in this together. Like I said, we're on the same team.
When coming off of like that last show, because you and I haven't talked since that show was over. What kind of was your thoughts on some of the matches and how much of the show were you able to see considering you had to prepare for your own match?
You know what? I didn't really see a whole lot at the time. I've gone back since and watched a good amount of it on DVD, but I definitely watched that main event that was just crazy and all over the place. Oh, and I saw a little bit of Tozawa and Ricochet live because Tozawa was just one of my favorites. He's just He's so charismatic and fun to watch. So I did get to see that. I think PWG lately has done a great job of containing their shows as far as like not having 4 or 5 hour shows. I mean, the tag tournament was pretty long, but I'm always leery of it's like the buffet theory. It's like you get excited to go to a buffet, you think it's awesome, you get there, and you leave with stomach cramps after stuff in your face. And then you don't want to go back to a buffet. I think a lot of wrestling companies do that to their fans. They want to give them, you know, more bang for their buck, and they just end up, they're tired at a main event, and then so many things happen, so that means less things stand out. There's less moments that people can latch on to and really remember. So I think PWG's done a great job having, you know, 7-8 matches on these shows and getting people out of there after about 3 hours.
You know, yeah. Let me ask you about this, because you've been on a million shows, and you brought that up about the length of the show. And it kind of seems to me that if you're the guy that is producing the show, or you're the promoter, or you're the booker, or you're even one of the featured acts or whatever, I mean, you're looking forward to this Battle of LA for God knows how long, and it's getting closer and closer, and you're all excited, just like Dave is right now. And the day comes, and the show starts, and it's just kind of like, man, let's go! And you're getting guys out there, and they're doing the thing, and you're like, let's keep going, everything's great. And you're not really thinking about what is the fan experience, exactly like you said. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure if you're the guy running the show and you're the performers and you're all excited about the day, you'd go all night. But the fans out there in the crowd, I mean, after a certain length of time, it's like, man, we've been watching for a long time now.
Well, it all depends on the situation, and every fan base is different. But I mean, to me, yeah. I think what 2 hours 15, 2 hours 30 for a wrestling show is about, you know, a number you want to hit. But yeah. But for PWG, it's clearly longer. I think if you did a 2-hour, 15-minute PWG show, given the fan base that's there, they would feel completely ripped off.
Sure.
Especially for the people that were in line for 6 hours for a 2-hour show.
Yeah. So it's like, well, normal, like my normal rule, you know, from going to indies is like, you know, really time it out so you're not keeping the people longer than 2 hours and 30 minutes, because when you do, usually your main event usually suffers for that. Because of that, unless you got really awesome guys. But at PWG, I mean, I've been to PWGs that went to probably close to 1 a.m. I've only been to a couple, but one went to close to 1 a.m. and it was really no problem. The other one, I think, the last one ended a lot earlier, and that was actually a really fun show to see, because it was just in and out, and I mean, that was, you know, a really well-timed show, in the sense that when it was over, I don't think anybody was tired. The main event didn't suffer at all from being long. I think even with the best guys, when you're heading towards 1 a.m., your main event's probably going to suffer a little bit, even at PWG.
Yeah, absolutely. Brian, I think one of our jobs, I mean, we get so caught up into what sequences we're going to do in the match and what kind of story we're going to tell and whatever, that sometimes we forget that we need to be synced up with the crowd. And the crowd can be different for any reason. I mean, it could be a long show. It could be just very hot, which is something that happens in Southern California, go figure.
Especially in August.
Exactly. And you have to know what match came before you. It's really our job to go the extra mile and kind of figure out what conditions we're going in, because you can put together, you know, a 5-star match, you know, in the back, but if you don't hit everything at the right times, or if they're just not in sync with you, it's just off or not. And unfortunately, I mean, we do that sometimes, and then it's on us to just read and react and adjust for future situations.
Now, you're not going to have this problem, because your match with Thatcher is going to be different than most of the matches on the show. But there's a lot of the guys that are on this show, when you look at them, you know, whether it's Phoenix and Drago and Jack Evans and Ricochet and people like that. I mean, it's like they're incredible flyers, but after a while, I mean, it's like, how much, you know what I mean? It's like, how much do they have to kind of like whether it be like get in sync, because, you know, sometimes if you go to a show and somebody does the same move in two straight matches, the following match, it's kind of like the fans will go, oh, we just saw this, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't inspire the same reaction.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, how is it on those guys? Because some of those guys are going to be doing very similar matches, and they're going to be spectacular. And once you get that first super spectacular match, you know, I mean, again, you know, Matt Sydal and all these guys, it's like, you know, you could do these incredible Angelico. I mean, you can do these incredible dives out of the ring. But, you know, once you got the one guy who's flying over the post and flipping three times and twisting.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, okay, now what do we do, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's, okay, so I say this a lot in, like, the little seminars and the consultation that I do. The utmost important thing for us is to make a connection with the crowd, and you just have to get them to care about you, and then by proxy they'll care so much more about what you do. And Dave, we talked about this before. I think the magic of PWG is, number one, everybody in that building wants to be there. They really, really want to be there, and therefore they want to like everything. They're already predisposed to go bananas for anybody and everybody. Number two, that makes everybody over, you know? So the guys that have been coming to PWG, you know, the wrestlers for the past couple of years, they're all very over. So it's our job as over wrestlers to take the wrestler. Like, for instance, when I wrestled Tommy End at PWG, there were some fans there that knew who he was and had seen his stuff. And, you know, he was in town for WrestleMania weekend. So maybe some people saw him up there, but at the same time, it was still our job to establish him and make the people care about him the way they care about the other people. An excellent job of this was last year at Battle Los Angeles when Zack Sabre Jr. was in a six-man tag, and he ran a sequence with Adam Cole. And, I mean, everybody respected Zack, but I believe the way that they put things together, and Cole's just such a good heel, that he really made Zack Sabre look like $1 million. And after a couple sequences, he was just completely made. And he's been made since.
Let me ask this question, since you're talking about the crowd. I mean, I understand what you say about how the fans bought their ticket and they want to go and they want to enjoy the show and they want to make sure that everything is great. And it's almost like that's too wonderful, because everybody buys their tickets for WWE, and when they go to Raw, sure, I mean, they paid their money and they want to go and they don't want to see a bad show. But this is a different kind of fan that's just like, we don't like John Cena. We're going to boo him out of the building. We're going to boo Roman Reigns. Yeah. We're not going to care one bit about the Divas segment. I mean, there's no easy answer to this. And obviously, you're looking at a very hardcore base of people that always go to PWG versus just the masses. But I mean, if Vince McMahon called you and he said, listen, Chris, can I get this John Cena guy over or what? Like, what could be done?
He already is over.
I mean, you know what I mean, though. Like, how can we get the people to like him and like the? I mean, is it even possible? What is it about PWG that these fans are so nice?
Well, it's part of it is it's so freaking hard to get tickets. WWE, it's really not that. If you really want a ticket to a WWE show, you're going to get the ticket. PWG, I mean, it's like work. But it's like, if WWE performed in a 300 seat building, and those people had to go, you know, go through hoops to get their tickets, those 300 people would probably be behaving differently in some ways, especially if there were no TV cameras on them and them trying to think that they're the show.
Well, that is also true. Part of that
it,
is true.
Which is also part of it. But I remember this. I was at the at WrestleMania in '96 in Anaheim. Okay, and it was really interesting. I had one of the guys on the show was a friend of mine who got me like tickets, and they were terrible tickets. They were like way up in the balcony, and everyone up in the balcony hated the show. I mean, like, hated it. The Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels people were walking out during that match, and when it was over, it was like I had this feeling like, God, this show really sucked. These fans hated it. But at the same time, like, and I think that the thing that was like the most notable to me is, remember those billionaire Ted skits that they did on that show? It was like the climax of the Billionaire Ted stuff. Okay. And they did this thing and I barely remember the segment, but I do remember that it was awful, really awful. And I noticed that like everyone around just going, oh, this is awful. But I looked down. Okay. And the first three rows, everybody stood up and gave it a standing ovation because those were the people who paid the most money for the tickets. And they were like the diehards. And it's like, that's the PWG audience, that first three rows, you know, it's like, so to them, it really is, you know, it's like if you only have that and those, you know, they're gonna be predisposed. Those were the people who are gonna like everything on that WrestleMania show, good, bad, or indifferent. You know, it's one of the things about playing. You know, I mean, you've played in big giant buildings, you've played in little small buildings and in between buildings, and they all have their own little idiosyncrasies. Like it's interesting. When you are in Japan and you're in a bigger building, or in the United States in a bigger building, compared to a normal building, I mean. What, as a performer, how do you adjust your style and what's kind of like your take on the different size buildings and performing in them?
Okay, so if we're going back to making a connection and having a pre-established connection with people in the crowd, the more people that are in a building, the less connection you're going to have because those people just don't know you as well. You know what I mean? And maybe they do know you, maybe they don't like you. So you have to structure your stuff so that it reaches the lowest common denominator. You know what I mean? So like if I go for my finishing move on someone and he moves out of the way, I have to ask myself, do these people even fucking know what my finishing move is? Right? So, well, let's educate them. Let's do something. And I'm clearly going for something and the guy is desperate to get away from it. So even if they don't know what it is, they know that I want to do it and the other guy doesn't want me to do it. So that's something that's kind of easy to understand. So in addition to that, you have to find pockets of the crowd that you do connect with. You know, people, you know, and it can even be, you know, drunk people that are just having fun or a little boisterous. And you need to interact with those people. You have to, you know, interject and play around with them a little bit and hope that it spreads. Because if it's quiet, a lot of wrestling fans are introverted and they don't like the attention on themselves. Some, I mean, imagine that, wrestling fans that don't want the attention, right? But in a small setting, they don't want everybody looking at them and paying attention to them. But if 10 people are cheering, it's that much easier to get 12 people to cheer. 12 people, it's easier to get 20, et cetera. So you just have to play with the crowd back and forth. And then when it's time to do your stuff, you have to deliver. You can't have any miscues. It's got to be solid work. And I think that's another thing about PWG, why everybody connects so closely, is because, number one, you are right on top of them. We can't fly out of the ring without taking precaution not to hit 7 people. So everything you see is so much more up close and so much more personal and so much more impressive. So the fans there know that you're seeing something special. So that's why it's a lot easier to connect in a 400-seat venue than it is a 40,000-seat venue.
Now, is it harder when you've got people right there on the ring apron? I mean, if John Cena were working a PWG show, I mean, you'd hear spots 3 blocks down the road. I mean, is it harder there? Or because obviously these can be some very complex matches, and you've got a lot of stuff going on, you got a lot of spots going on. I mean, is it harder? Is it not so hard?
It's definitely more difficult, but at the same time, it's also very loud. So
that's true.
When it's that loud and that close, as long as you're not flapping your gums, as long as you're not yelling across the ring, you should be okay. And we have the benefit that a lot of us have kind of grown up together, so we're really good with body language. And a lot of us have been over to Europe and been over to Japan, and we've dealt with the language barrier. So it's not even about telling someone to do something. It's just presenting yourself or just, you know, having the body language to make yourself available for your opponent.
Now, everything that you were talking about in terms of big buildings, small buildings, working for the lowest common denominator, everything like that, it's all basic wrestling psychology. And obviously, as you've shown, I mean, it works great. Now, when you went to NXT, I don't know if they still do this or not, but I remember, like, for a period, there was this deal where, like, they didn't want you to play to the crowd. It's kind of like, what?
Yeah.
They don't want you to play. They want you to be a pro wrestler, but don't play to the crowd. Like, what are we doing here? I mean, when you first got there and they started saying, okay, here's some of the things. We know you've done this before. We know you're used to this, but this is how we do it here. What are some of the craziest things that you heard?
Well, I think there was an incident with Punk and a fan, and I think there was an incident with Del Rio and a fan, and I don't know why, but they were just like, yeah, don't interact with the crowd anymore. Don't talk to anyone. And we were doing some of these small shows where there are 30, 40 people legitimately in the crowd, and we're supposed to ignore them. That's weird. It's very weird, and watching these shows, you could definitely tell. But one viewpoint that I do see is, for instance, when you're on Raw, you're in the ring, you're wrestling in front of, let's say 15,000 people, right? Well, what they justify is, yes, there's 15,000 people in attendance, and you want them to be into the mat. However, if you look through that camera, there's, 2 million people on the other side of that camera. You know, would you rather work for the 15,000 or the 2 million watching at home? So,
but it's kind of a little bit.
I would rather work for the 15,000 because then we'd be going crazy for the 2 million people at home.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean,
it's like a chicken egg thing too, because if you have the people going crazy in the crowd, they're more conducive to people at home receiving it better. But I mean, you need to know how to do both. You know, it's important to work for a camera. It's also important to work for the dude sitting in the front row. Or like they say, people in the nosebleeds, they need to be able to see what you're doing. Like, for instance, whenever Lawler would pull out a chain, this is like our little story. And when he'd pull out a chain, he wouldn't, like, hide it and, like, wrap it around.
No, he would display it.
He would stretch his arm out.
Yes.
Oh, and he would he'd do it so slow, too.
And that is for the benefit of the people all the way up in the back that can go, oh, my God, he's got something in his hands, right?
And I thought that kind of thing made it better. I mean, I watched Nitro, and Ric Flair will be in a ring, and he's having this match, and something will happen, and he'll be foiled. And he'll get out of the ring, he'll start walking around ringside, he'll yell at individual fans, they'll laugh at him, which makes him even more angry. And it's like, this makes the match so much better to see this guy getting so frustrated interacting with these fans.
Yeah.
All right, one more.
Go ahead.
Tell me about this, because this has also been driving me crazy. When you do an interview, I have noticed that if it's just you, if there's nobody interviewing you, you're allowed to look at the camera. But if there's another human on screen interviewing you, you're not allowed to look at the camera.
You have to look at the person.
Which doesn't make... No, not even that. You, like, look off screen. Which, to me, is always like, it looks like you're reading from a teleprompter because you're just randomly looking off screen at nothing as you do this promo. What do they tell you about promos and eye contact?
I believe when you're doing a backstage, Renee Young's interviewing you, and you guys are, like, looking at each other and not looking into the camera, there's a belief that if you make eye contact when that's going on, that it breaks the fourth wall and takes the fans out of it, like, oh.
There is no fourth wall in sports.
Yeah. Yes. But I believe that's the motivation behind it. Why it's different than the one-on-one promos, I don't really know, but yeah. Like, only certain people, if you notice, Cena and Punk were the only ones to, like, look into the camera on their way to the ring. You know, they'll have, like, a conversation with the cameraman on the way down the ring.
Right.
Sure, yeah.
Right.
That's not super encouraged to most people that aren't John Cena and CM Punk.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just so used to growing up on guys looking at the camera with the idea that you're looking at their eyes, and their eyes are going to give you whether it's the believability or the non-believability in the connection.
That's how you connect with people. You see their eyeballs. You see how they feel. you know, the emotions on their face. You know, it's hard to do that if you're not looking straight on.
Yeah. We're going in another direction. Of course, you work for Pro Wrestling NOAH several tours every year. What's kind of like your thoughts and feelings on that promotion and how things have evolved this year, you know, because they obviously have changed the face of the promotion, you know, with the Suzuki and everybody coming in.
You know what I think? Last time we chatted on here, I was talking about how much I like that the booking has changed. And they went from the very old, predictable and methodical style of you could look on a lineup and guess who's going to beat who.
Right.
But now there are, you know, there's a little bit more parity, at least in the mid card. And you do give, you know, some of the other guys get some big wins here or there. Like, I've been in the Global League, I've been in the Global Tag League, and I've definitely been, you know, been surprised by some of the results of some of the matches. Like, when I first came back, I had pinfall victories over Marufuji, over Kenta. You know, I beat Masato Tanaka. Matches like that where before, I definitely would not have won. But, I mean, regardless of winning or losing, it's just whether or not the fans start to buy you or you know, just to have attach a little legitimacy to you. So I think that has continued. I think that's awesome. I like the New Japan flavor with the Suzuki Goon coming in and just kind of switching things up. And you can tell Corkin, the last few Corkin shows I've done have all been so, you know, so hot. The fans are really invested in this, and it's good to see that, because I think for the longest time NOAH just had good matches and good title matches, but not necessarily compelling journeys to the championship, et cetera. Now they've got a group that has hijacked all the belts, so it's, you know, kind of like, are they going to get the belts back, or how, or who? So it's more compelling. It's a little bit of different flavor, and I'm happy to see it going in that direction.
I know that I don't think you were not on the show, but they did. They had like a riot at one of the shows. I don't know, about 6 weeks ago, I think. I remember writing about it. It was fans were like throwing stuff and everything at it was at Suzuki Gun and everything. And
yeah,
you know, I know that like when I first read about it, I'm going, oh, a riot, it's not good. And then one of the guys in the riot said, oh, this was so great. So then I thought, well, maybe it wasn't so bad after all. So.
Yeah, and I thought another cool thing they did was they had like a Suzuki Goon produced show where they had
right.
Corkin with like they had like the ring made up differently, and the referees had to wear Suzuki Goon shirts, and basically it drew the fan, like the heel fans, the fans that love that stuff, a lot of the New Japan fans. So it, you know, it's kind of reminiscent of the CZW Ring of Honor thing where you're injecting your crowd with some contrarians that come in and like battle. So it's not just about the matches. It's also about the crowd interaction. And I think there's a lot of respect between the fans and the NOAH product. But I mean, how many times can you see the same matches over and over and over and over until you just lose your investment?
Yeah. Who are the next Speedball Mike Baileys that you've seen running around the country, running around North America?
Man.
Oh, I think we just lost him. Your Speedball Mike Bailey question knocked him off the line. All right, stand by, everybody.
Just to talk about Speedball for a moment, he's actually been around a while. He's not as much of a rookie as some people think. I think he broke in 2006 in the Montreal area. Yeah, he's 25. He was a black belt when he was 14 years old. So he's very adept at his karate, jujitsu, what have you. But he's just now getting out. Like the last year and a half, last 2 years, he's been making an effort to get out and work more companies. I love his style, and he's going to get over everywhere he goes because he's so different. I think his look is very conducive to his work too, because he legitimately looks like a karate kid. Like you go, oh, this, you know, that's a kid. And his stuff is so impressive. You know, he can kick you from anywhere. He doesn't do like brain busters. He doesn't do power bombs. He jumps on you and lands on you, and then he kicks you. So I think it's a good foil for, you know, wrestlers like myself. Who else is good? Okay, so there's a kid on the East Coast who I've been teaming with. His name is JT Dunn. Mm-hmm. We have a tag team called Death by Elbow because, you know, he was kind of doing some of the similar things that I did. I came into Beyond Wrestling in Providence, and we had a couple matches together that went really well. And we just kind of turned that into a team. And, you know, after some unsuccessful matches, we finally, you know, started stringing together some wins. We just had a match with the Young Bucks not too long ago. But he's a guy I think is fantastic, and I look for him to, you know, work a lot more in the next year. There's a kid I wrestled in England. I think I may have spoken about him before, too. His name is Tyler Bate. He just turned 18 years old. And I had like a 38.5-minute Ironman match with him due to a, there was like a clock malfunction, and then the 5 more minutes had a bit of a malfunction. So we wrestled.
Was it supposed to be 30 or 60?
It was supposed to be 30.
That's quite a malfunction.
Yeah, and there was the clock disappeared halfway through the match, and then when they put it back on, I guess it wasn't accurate. And then we had 5 more minutes that went like, you know, 7 minutes or whatever, but whatever. Anyway, he's like 18, and he reminds me so much of like post-Memphis Bryan Danielson. And I know that that's very high praise, but just his small things are very good. His selling, his fire, very, you know, very, very, very vital, important things that usually don't come to someone until many years later in their career. He's also, you know, he's short, stocky. He's a big fan of Cesaro, so he's, you know, he works on the power moves. He does a little bit of stuff that's impressive, too, but he's a guy I think is very talented. There are a lot out there, man. I'm really excited. I'm not on the first night. So I'll be doing commentary at Battle Los Angeles, and there's so many matches I'm looking forward to. I think the coolest looking match will probably be Drago against Pentagon. Like, can you think of any match that's just going to look cooler than that?
No.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
This guy is incredible.
Have those guys been in? How many of the Lucha guys have been in before? Because
Pentagon's been in, right?
Yeah, because I haven't seen any of them that I can, other than Jack and Helico, I saw obviously in the last show, but I haven't seen them. But I've only been, like I said, I've only been to a couple shows.
Not that I've seen. Now, I don't know about the Wrestle Reunion shows before where they had like Masquerita and Mini Abismo maybe, or Mini Damien. I forget who all they had at those times, but I believe these may be debuts for all of these guys.
Yeah. Actually, maybe I'm just thinking of the lineup that was out. Because the lineup for the first two nights has been out for a few months, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's probably where I saw it.
Only a couple weeks. Only a couple weeks.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I think Ricochet and Matt Sydal is going to be... Wait, no, that's not the match, is it? It's Ricochet
and Zack Sabre.
Yes, and then Sydal's wrestling Phoenix. I think
which is a really unique match.
Out of control. I think Ospreay is going to be, I think he's going to impress people. He's very spectacular. He had a match not too long ago in England with Sydal that was incredible. And I think Speedball is the guy this tournament that the fans are really going to rally behind because, I mean, he just beat me, but before that he hadn't really won anything, I don't think, at PWG, so this could be his chance to kind of rally and, you know, make a push to the finals.
The show is the Battle of Los Angeles. There are 3 days, as noted. It's going to be very difficult to get in, if impossible, perhaps. Everything is sold out. Front row, general admission, standing room only. Friday, August 28th, all of the shows at American Legion Post number 308 in Reseda, California. And Chris Hero is noted as doing commentary on night one. Night two, he's facing Timothy Thatcher. All sorts of huge names. Ricochet, Zack Sabre Jr., and Helico. Jack Evans, as we were talking about. Pentagon, Young Bucks. The list goes on and on. So, Chris, before you go on, I give you a chance to plug all of your stuff as well. Your Twitter, I know you're very active on. You got a lot of clips up there of some of your stuff. Any other upcoming dates you've got? The floor is yours.
Yeah, at the Chris Hero. It's pretty easy. If you just put my name in Google, a bunch of stuff will come up. Most of it is pretty good. Yeah, I've got some more international stuff coming up later this year. Let's see. I just worked for a group in Chicago called Freelance Wrestling. Have you heard about that, Brian?
No.
They have really gifted, audio and video guys that put together some great videos, and they film it really well. They have a place called the Abbey, you know, in Chicago, and just it's a very cool atmosphere. It's a concert venue. There's people everywhere. I'm actually coming back to Chicago in a couple weeks, Chicago area, to wrestle for AAW. So yeah, I've got a lot of stuff coming up. I'm excited. I do anywhere from like 8 to 15 shows a month. So I'm staying busy.
Is that like your what's your preferred number? Or is there a preferred number?
I like to have stuff every weekend.
Yeah.
But I also like to sometimes have more than 2 or 3 days a week to myself at home, because it's like get home Tuesday, fly out Thursday.
Yeah.
Which, there's no complaint, but, you know, sometimes it's nice to be able to take a couple days to do laundry.
So are you based down in Florida or in Ohio or somewhere
else?
I still
live in Orlando. I'm in Winter Park.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my mom still lives in Dayton, Ohio, though. That's where I was born and raised.
Yeah.
At the Chris Hero is the Twitter. Head up there for all of that. And make sure if you're in the area, if you've got tickets, check out PWG next couple of days. And Chris, thanks so much for doing the show today. And of course, thanks everybody for listening. We'll talk to you again after a while.